Okay, welcome. Good afternoon. The longer I do this, the simpler it seems. I realize, and you know, the simpler it is, first of all, let me say what it is, since I see that there are those here who I don't think I've seen before. Here's the insight of Ramana Maharshi. And it is an insight that struck him very early in his life and really doesn't have much of anything of the spiritual about it. Although, of course, it appears within a spiritual context because of where he lived and what his family was like and so forth. He himself would little spiritual background. He was, after all, a teenager, a 16-year-old boy, and did not receive this insight as the result of a spiritual practice or spiritual training or spiritual understanding of any kind. It just came to him in the fear of death. And the insight is this, and you'll recognize that there is, that the essence of this insight is the foundation of pretty much the whole spiritual realm of all of the techniques, all of the teachings, all of the traditions have at their heart this same insight, although since they are surrounded and kind of smothered in spiritual understanding, it is more or less difficult to see it there. But you may recognize it anyway. Ramana's insight is this. The only problem in all of human existence is a false belief about what we are. The only solution, therefore, is the truth. It's that simple. There's nothing more to it than that. Of course, the truth of what we are is itself astoundingly simple. It's not hard to get. It doesn't require lifetimes of meritorious practice. It doesn't require advanced and deep understanding of the nature of reality. It doesn't require training and years of meditation practice, because what you are is here, always, never absent, never missing, not hard, not far. It's you, here, always. So this is the astonishingly simple foundation of what Ramana Maharshi called, or at least that we translate as, self-inquiry, atma-vikara, which is nothing more than the practice of looking at yourself here and now, in this moment. Not anything complicated, not anything particularly spiritual, not anything at all, really, except to just look at yourself, to have the intention to see what you are here in this moment, right now, repeatedly. It's Ramana's insight and Ramana's contention that if we will do that, if we will look to see what we are, which is really easy, this is the easy part. The hard part is talking about it. If we will look to see what we are, as often as we can, that this and this alone will wipe out, eradicate, destroy the false belief that we are something else, like our lives, which is what we mostly believe ourselves to be, our lives. And that nothing else will do it. That there's nothing we can do within our minds and our lives, within the apparatus that we believe ourselves to be, that can rid ourselves of the belief that we are that apparatus. I mean, that's kind of self-evident, right? anything we do within the apparatus can only enhance and strengthen the belief that we are that apparatus. We can't rid ourselves of this false idea by calming the mind, by ending thought, by easing our, by curing our neurotic behaviors and our neurotic tendencies. We can't rid ourselves of the false belief by anything that we do to improve or transform or reform the apparatus that we believe ourselves to be. Can't hurt us to do those things. Can't help us either. I mean, it can make the apparatus nicer or not. The only thing that can wipe out the belief that we are that apparatus is the repeated seeing directly, immediately, of what we are actually, which is we have some clues and some pointers as to what it is we're looking for. It is that which is permanent, that which doesn't come and go, that which doesn't change, that which is unaffected by all of the storm and drama of the apparatus itself. It is that which is the same now, I, that I was when I was 3, or 5, or 10. It is this certainty that I am here, this absolute, self-evident certainty that I am. Now, it's easy to see that, you know. I mean, there's not even you, can persuade yourself that you don't exist. It's not possible for you to do that. It's possible for you to persuade yourself that I don't exist, that I am not here. I mean, I am, after all, just a figment in your mind, an apparition. It's possible for you to persuade yourself that the world doesn't exist. It, too, is, after all, just a endlessly unfolding figment within your mind, an apparition. But you can't be persuaded ever that you don't exist. Nothing can convince you of that. There's no way that you can even say with any conviction, I am not. That's ridiculous on the face of it. So the target of the investigation, the target of the inquiry, what is meant when Ramana says to look at yourself, is to have, in this moment, the experience of that certainty. Not a story about it, but the actuality of it. That certainty that I am. And if you do that repeatedly, every time it occurs to you to do so, the promise is that gradually the belief that you are your life will vanish. And with it will vanish the whole sense that there's something at stake for you in your life, which of course is the source of all the problems, the idea that you are at stake in your life, that you must get it right, that you can't be wrong, that you've got to banish and get rid of bad thoughts, cling to and hold on to good thoughts. You have to have understanding. You have to be clear. You have to be good. You have to be righteous. All of those ideas, which themselves are the force that creates the war within us of this against that. I want this. I don't want that. And that all arises from this unseen, unspoken, and unknown conviction that I am my life. Which is, you know, justifiable, just not true. So the inquiry, the repeated, whenever you can, it doesn't take like becoming a monk. You can become a monk, but it doesn't require that. It doesn't take like devoting every waking hour, every second to to looking at yourself. You can do that, but it doesn't require that. It just requires that every time it occurs to you to do so, every time it occurs to you to do so, you just stop for 1 second and say to yourself, what am I? What does it feel like to be here? Not in order that you can explain what it feels like to be here, but in order to direct your conscious attention toward that experience of being here. Because it is the taste of that that wipes out the falseness. Now that's really simple. It's a lot simpler. It's a lot easier done than said. I mean, I've been running off for 10 minutes or so to say something that is really, really simple. Religions have been built on this simple insight. Practices, lengthy practices, lifetimes of practices have been built on this simple insight unnecessarily. But it's even simpler than that, it occurred to me recently. And of course, the simpler it is, the more tragic is the calamity that has beset humankind. Because tragedy is calamity that befalls one who has done nothing to deserve it. Calamity that befalls in circumstances when it could be easily averted. And it occurred to me recently that it's even simpler than all that, even less than all that. I was reflecting not long ago on, I read something about Christianity, the religion, not the teaching, the religion, which has little to do with Christ. So I'm not really talking about Christ here. But I was reading about how the religion of Christianity spread incredibly fast, spread like wildfire once it got started. And the reason for that, I was told, instructed, was because of the viral nature of the marketing of Christianity. It's easy, right? There's this idea that you need redemption, that you need salvation, and that the way to get salvation is to recognize that Jesus Christ died for your sins and that therefore you are already redeemed. All that has to happen is this internal emotional experience in which you accept the truth of Christ's sacrifice on your behalf. And as it happens, the procedure whereby this is transmitted is such that it produces an enormously satisfying emotional experience that is called spiritual because it happens in a spiritual context. So it didn't take like people coming to Jerusalem, for example, in order to receive Shaktipat or some necessary instruction into the basic foundation of Christian belief, because anybody could spread it. Anybody. Paul wandered around for a while, spreading this in all the different places that he wandered to, and then the people in those local places were able to spread it because it's a really easy thing to transmit. Once you get it, it's really easy to transmit. And I thought, I wonder why this that is so much simpler and actually is the heart of the matter can't also that easily be transmitted and spread throughout humanity in a viral way. And reflecting on that, it occurred to me that one of the reasons, of course, is that it seems to take some threshold of spiritual training in order even to be able to receive the suggestion that is contained in self-inquiry. It takes some, you have to have some familiarity with the spiritual realm before I can begin talking to you about the fact that you are not what you believe yourself to be. That if I walked into the sports bar and said that, I probably would not get as open a reception as I do here among you who have some spiritual background to you. But then I realized it's even simpler than that. It really doesn't take any of that either. It doesn't take any understanding of self. It doesn't take any understanding that it is even spiritual. It doesn't take any understanding that it arose in some spiritual environment and realm. All it takes, really, check this out. All it takes is to get somebody, this is the promise, this is the claim. All it takes is to get somebody to have the direct, immediate experience of being. Just that. You don't even have to know what being is. That you are, you know. So all it really takes, you know, like you're out there in the world and you have family and friends and people are in some crisis of psychological torture and so forth. All it takes is just, you know, wait a minute. I'm going to tell you how you can feel better for just a second. It won't last, but you can feel better for just a second. Just stop for a second and see if it is not true that you are here. Just for a second, don't pay attention to all that torment, which, you know, God knows it's really important to pay attention to. But just for a second, don't pay attention to it and see whether or not it's true that you are here and what that feels like to be here. Just that. So, it's simpler than I've ever said it was. And the longer I do this, the simpler I see it to be. You don't need anything. You don't need to know Ramana Maharshi. You don't ever have to have heard of Ramana Maharshi. You don't need meditation bells. You don't need namastes and all of that. All you need, all you ever need, is to stop for a second and see what it feels like to be. You are here, are you not? You can't deny that. You are here. Why can't you deny that? What is it within you that makes it impossible for you to deny that you are here? Why are you so certain of that? What does it feel like to be so certain of that? And do that as often as you can. Because it feels good when you do it. It's not like it feels bad. It feels good when you do it. You know, other stuff happens when you're not doing it that might not feel so good. But all the more reason, it feels good when you do it. And if you do it for long enough, which is God knows how long that is, it depends on the individual tendencies. If you do it for long enough, after a time, before you even know that it's happened, the idea that you are your life and that everything is at stake in this life will be gone. And the day will come when you say, you know what? Things are sweet and have been for a long time. It's been a long time since I have felt like I had to kill something in order to be happy. Or had to get something in order to be happy. Or had to hold on to something in order to be happy. It's been a long time since I have felt that I am at stake in what happens in this life. And that's pretty darn sweet. And I'll tell you something else, too. Just one more thing. Most spiritual teachings and most spiritual practices begin with the evocation of the vast mystery in which we appear and disappear, of the hugeness of the unknowingness in which we have our being as these individual life apparati. Is that a word, apparati? And as a result of that, we think that it is in that experience of mystery and unknowingness and hugeness and vastness, and it is in that that we find our salvation and our redemption. And we spend, God knows, maybe lifetimes. One lifetime's enough for anybody. But we spend lifetimes, maybe, trying to grasp, trying to have the experience of that mystery, of that hugeness, of God, of love, of eternal being, of eternal consciousness. And we suffer. We suffer. But I tell you this, that's because we put the cart before the horse. So long as we believe ourselves to be our lives, this vastness is inaccessible to us. So long as we believe ourselves to be our lives, this great mystery of reality is untouchable by us. But when that belief is gone, the infinite certainty of mystery, of untouchable reality, is seen to be ever present, not far, not needing to be gotten, here, always. We got to stop putting the cart before the horse. We got to start where we are, which is trapped in this stupid belief that I am my life. We got to rid ourselves of that. And that's easy. It's as easy as falling off a log. Honest. Cross my heart. Simpler than I ever imagined. So that is, for me, the self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi. And it is the self-inquiry of you. It is great, great, huge, enormous luck that Ramana Maharshi stumbled upon this insight, this healing, curing, transforming, transcending insight. Simple. Simple, simple. And it is great, huge, good luck that we have heard of it as a result of his stumbling upon it. It is tinged with a little bit of bad luck because we think he was a spiritual guru, because he carries the title Maharshi, because he seems to be one of these Indian gurus sitting in a loincloth transmitting peace and contentment. He brings you the key to eternal happiness, but he can't give it to you. I can't give it to you. Nobody can give it to you, and nobody can take it away from you. But I promise you from my heart that if you will do this, if you will stop whenever it occurs to you to do so repeatedly and taste the reality of what you are, you'll be finished with all misery and suffering in this lifetime. Now I can let you look at Ramana. Okay, that's it. That's all I got. Any questions or arguments or... Yes.
Yeah,
would you come up here?
Yeah.
It's for the others.
Okay, yeah.
Who aren't here.
Even when you get to this state that you're describing, what about physical pain? What about intense physical pain?
Yeah, but first of all, let me correct one thing. I'm not talking about getting to a state. What I'm talking about is what you always are. We'll get to the other part, all right? But what I'm talking about is what you always already are. It's not some new state. Okay? I'm not talking about any kind of new state.
Okay, well, this way of thinking.
I'm not even talking about a way of thinking. I'm talking about the fact that you're here and you know it.
Right.
And it's that I'm talking about.
But I've always known that.
That's right. That's my point. You've always known that. That's all there is to you. There is nothing else to you. This apparatus, this life, is not you. It's not separate from you, but it's not you.
I can believe that,
believe it, you'll suffer.
I mean, I can believe that this apparatus is not me.
Oh, you need to hold the microphone up. I'm getting...
I can believe this apparatus is not me.
See, that's not...
Is that what you're talking about?
No, that's not what That's not what I'm talking about. That's another belief about what you are, okay? The point of the self-inquiry is to rid yourself of all beliefs about what you are. Now, it doesn't hurt you to believe that you're not the apparatus, just as it doesn't hurt you to believe that you are the apparatus. What I want to see is for you to rid yourself of all these beliefs. And there's nothing you can do that. Nothing. There's no new understanding that can come within your mind that will result in ridding yourself of the belief that you are not your mind. You follow that?
Yeah.
Okay. So what I'm talking about and what I am always talking about is the fact that what you are is here. And that no matter how advanced your understanding may be, how subtle and nuanced your understanding may be, that understanding cannot ever rid yourself of the belief that you are the one who understands. That belief is unseen. You see, one of the problems there is that when I speak of belief, I'm not speaking of a verb. I'm speaking of a phenomenon, a present phenomenon that is not seen, that we are not conscious of, that cannot be, that nothing can be done about, nothing, within the mind, within understanding. And and what I claim and what Ramana claims is that that the idea is that phenomenon, that belief, which is unseeable, not accessible to conscious thought, that phenomenon is the cause of all the trouble. And the only thing that can be rid of that, the only way to be rid of that phenomenon is by repeated doses of the taste of the reality of what you are. Now that doesn't necessarily mean that the mind will change in any way. I mean, it's always changing, right? So it will change. But the confirmation, the result of being rid of this phenomenal belief that I am my life is not necessarily reflected in understanding. It's not necessarily reflected in, oh, I get it now. Oh, now I feel really good, whereas before I felt really bad. This life will feel good sometimes. It'll feel bad sometimes. It'll feel enlightened sometimes. It'll feel ignorant and confused other times. That won't change. What changes is, in the absence of the belief that it's you, nothing is at stake in any of that. And quite surprisingly, when nothing is at stake in any of that, all of that tends to dissipate, the force of it, the strength of it. You follow me?
I follow you. Yeah. No idea, yeah.
Right. It's hard to speak of, but once you hear it,
No, it's just like this is some kind of it's not me, it's some kind of an actor or something.
Yes, that's right. And that there is this unseeable conviction that it is you. There's nothing you can do about it directly. The only thing you can do about it is to and I often talk about, I don't know, have you been in satsang with me before?
No, I just read a few books. Uh-huh. I read Ramana's book.
Okay. How I often speak of this is that it is like medicine. It's not like a spiritual practice. It's much more like medicine, like an antibiotic. if you have an infectious disease and you're told to take an antibiotic and you take the antibiotic regularly, after a while that infectious disease will be gone, although you have no conscious experience of what's happening to rid yourself of that disease.
Right.
It's the same with this practice of looking at yourself. You have no conscious experience of what's going on, but just by continuously and repeatedly moving your attention into this certainty of being that's always here, never changes, that's the medicine.
How do you do that, certainty of being?
Just like this. Are you here?
Yeah, it seems like I exist.
How do you know that? What's the basis for that?
I'm conscious.
What does that mean?
I'm aware.
There's
awareness.
And who is this I? But you see, I can see it. I can see by the way your eyes are going that you're looking in thought for an answer to the question. But it's much simpler than that. The fact that you are here rests upon a continuous experience of being that is very simple, that never changes. That, and it's within this experience of being that all of these thoughts and so forth come and go and play and appear and disappear. But what I want you to get is just for a second to have the conscious recognition of this background certainty of being. Just that. Now, you may, and there are ways, and it's very difficult for me to direct your attention to it because it is subtle beyond belief and it is ordinary beyond belief. It, obviously, if it's permanent and unchanging, it is very ordinary. So it is so easily overlooked. But consider this, and this is like a cliche, right, in the culture. Everyone who has attained any age whatsoever has had the experience at some point of looking at in the mirror and saying, wow, look how the body has changed. Look how I have changed.
Looking in the mirror?
Yeah, look how I have changed. But I feel exactly the same as I did when I was 5.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah.
That's it. It's that. That's the target of the inquiry. And it is the repeated conscious tasting of that that's the medicine that wipes out that belief. And it doesn't matter, right, that there dawned within your mind an understanding of what's going on and so forth. That doesn't matter. You know, you'll have ideas of what's going on and then you'll have ideas of what's not going on and so forth. But all of that is beside the point. Anything that happens within the mind is beside the point. The only thing that is the point are those moments of the direct experience of this unchanging background. Follow me?
It seems like you're saying to stop thinking.
No, see, I'm not saying to stop thinking. I'm saying that whether you're thinking or not thinking, you're here. Whether there is drama going on or not going on, you are here. And you are the same. I'm saying that you are not affected by any of it, and it's possible for you to have the conscious experience of this unchangingness deliberately. Just to stop. Wait a minute. Have I changed? Am I here? What am I? What is it that... I mean, it's not the body. The body is experiences that I have. They change things, you know. I'm often not consciously experiencing my foot. But my foot is there, I guess. But the one thing that I am always conscious of is me. The background. And that's what I'm talking about.
You're not talking about me, the personality, are you?
No. Personality is the apparatus. Me is a story about you. The personality is a story about you. I is a story about you. What I'm talking about is what all those things, stories are being told about, which is this that we just touched a moment ago, this that is the same now as it was when you were five.
It was me.
Yeah, that's right. That's it. You touch that as often as you can, and you will see that over time, this feeling that everything is at stake in the way this life plays out, and whether I do it right, whether I do it wrong, whatever, that this feeling will fade. And with it will fade most of the internal warfare that goes on within your mind. Because most of that internal warfare is predicated on the certainty that I am at stake here. Okay?
I understand.
Okay. Okay. And pain, physical pain?
Yeah.
You know, physical pain is a matter of the body. It comes and goes, or it comes and stays. There are treatments for it, or there are not treatments for it. But they're not you. It's not you. When pain is here, you are the same. When pain is gone, you are the same.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Yes, okay. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
What's your name?
Larry.
Larry, it's my pleasure to meet you. Yes?
I'm going to try to come up this
time. Okay, you don't have, okay. Well, you're doing good. I don't remember your name, I'm afraid.
I'm going to translate a little bit so it'll be easier for me. Greg.
Greg, that's it.
Yeah. To express my thanks.
Ah, you're very welcome.
I had this conflict of whether I was going to come up or not because I thought this would happen. I was afraid whether people think I was crazy or not. But
I think everybody feels the relief. It's like,
yeah, you're crazy. I think I am, but I'm getting less and less crazy. Just a second, excuse me. Yeah, but John, you're the explanation and the your satsang, the way that you point with your what you say has been incredibly helpful.
I'm really happy to hear that. You can't imagine how happy I am to hear that.
I'm glad. Just cutting. I guess I mean that's your interpretation of Ramana, but just cutting out the fluff. Just going right to the heart of the matter.
Yes, you see, that's what Ramana did, and it's sometimes hard for us to see that because those who have kind of taken over Ramana's, you know, legacy, I suppose you'd have to call it, have surrounded him with these spiritual ideas. These, you know, well, anyway, but it's Ramana.
Right, and it's like all the spiritual context can be really confusing.
Yes, it is.
So I wasn't sure what I was going to say. I kind of rehearsed it in my mind, but that's, you know, that I don't even remember what that was. But yes, I don't really feel done right now, but I'm not sure what to say.
I kind of think you said it pretty perfectly, really. Whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know, the interesting thing about this spiritual business is that spiritual utterance is stories about you. Just like I is a story about you. Just like the personality is a story about you. The life history is a story about you. Spiritual utterance also is a story about you. The poetry, the sutras, the shastras, the tales, the parables, and all of that. And as long as this belief persists that you are your life, that cannot make sense to you. Because you're using your mind to try to receive something from these stories when they are, after all, just stories about you. As that belief begins to fade, then you see, begin to see the spiritual utterances from the other side, from the side from whence they arise. And you see that they really are not very serious at all, that they are actually quite lighthearted and have no internal self-importance about them. So,
thank you.
Oh, you're really welcome.
I really appreciate it.
This is great good news. Okay. Anybody else? Wow, that just knocked me out. Just has nothing more to say.
Well, I have another question.
Okay.
Okay.
When I was...
His first exchange with you may have done it for everybody. And, you know,
yeah, well, you know, I don't care, but I'll come up here 10 times. But when I was 2 weeks old, I don't remember having a story or a body or anything. But they tell me that I felt pain then. Mm. I seemed to be crying. I seemed to be uncomfortable. But I don't remember. I don't even remember being an I.
No. No, certainly not.
So what state was... I mean, what was I in then when I was 2 weeks old?
You're the same as you are now. You're the same as you are now. I mean, when the body goes to sleep and the mind shuts down at night, you remain. Are you missing that?
I can't remember. I don't remember when the body is asleep. I can't remember.
But you know you're there.
Unless I'm dreaming.
No, that's just more stories being told. But when all the stories are quiet, when the mind is shut down, when the body is asleep, still there you are. You haven't changed. You are the same. You know when the body, you will see if you pay attention. When the body and the mind begins to reassert itself, reassemble itself, you see that happening. I mean, you know that this is happening. It's back. And for most of your life, you think I'm back. And what was I doing, and what should I be doing now, and wait a minute, what was it I was thinking yesterday, and what do I have to figure out today, And I'm here, and I got to be there. And
I hate to wake up in the morning.
You know, and that's the way the day starts. But if you really are quiet when the body begins to reassemble itself, when the apparatus begins to assemble itself, you'll see that you've always been there. You see it take place. You know, if you were the body and the mind, if you were this life form, then when the body and the mind shut down, there would be nothing. Now, you may think there's nothing now, but it would be like a fast cut in a movie. 1 second, you know, there you are up. The next second, it's morning. But that isn't the way it is. There is, as you awake, there is the certainty that you were, that you are. There is this certainty that this background, this profound presence has never moved whatsoever. That's why, as Ramana always said, that all human beings, when they wake, will say, I slept well, or I slept poorly. It's you is the whence for that report. You are present always, without regard to body or mind, without regard to life or no life. You are here. And I tell you something else too, and this is something I also almost, I don't know what's getting into me. I must be getting in some kind of spiritual virus or something. I'll tell you something else too. When we stumble upon the spiritual realm and the spiritual aspirations and so forth, we begin to search for realization and enlightenment and all of that. But realization and enlightenment come and go in you. And the truth is that this life is the realization of consciousness. This life, just as it is, just as it unfolds, the apparatus itself is the realization that it seeks. The life itself is the form that arises from formless being. Rises and falls, comes and goes, shifts and changes, displays itself, tells stories about itself. But you're the source of it.
I read the book by Ramana called Be As You Are.
Uh-huh.
And he has this thing where he's self-inquiry, he calls it,
yeah,
where he says,
that's what we're talking about.
Who am I? Or sometimes I say, what am I? But I don't know. Who am I? What am I? Where am I? But anyway, where is the real me? But anyway, the point is, when you say that, when you ask yourself that question, he says, but don't answer it.
Yeah.
Don't try to figure out an answer.
Yeah. Isn't that what I said a little while ago?
Well, something like that, yeah. But I mean, I'm not sure I...
The point of the question, who am I, is not to arrive at an answer to the question, who am I? The point of the question, who am I, is to point your attention in the proper direction. That's all.
Oh, okay. To point your direction at the am I.
That's right, at the am.
At the am.
That's the whole point of the question. And we do get confused about it, and one of the reasons we get confused about it is because we use the personal pronoun. And
instead of who
what
am I?
Is better.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
I
that's
suppose.
That's better for me. What am
yeah.
What is I?
Right. But I'll tell you here too, as long as we're here just kind of kicking it and so forth. Ramana has two, and I don't know if he ever explicitly spoke about it in this way, but you see, I had to go through a big drama to get to Ramana. And one of my great goals in life is to relieve you of the necessity of going through that big drama because it really isn't necessary. Big spiritual melodrama.
Me too.
But
me too.
Ramana has two aspects of self-inquiry. In one aspect of self-inquiry, which is the one that I speak about all the time, it is the determination to have the taste of the reality of what I am. And really, that's all that's required. You know, like we have had a wonderful conversation here today in which you saw what I was pointing to when this doesn't change and so forth. And that's one aspect of self-inquiry.
Yeah, I always think of that. Like, geez, I'm the same as when I was born.
Yes, that's right. And that's the medicine. That's the absolute medicine that cures the belief that you are your life. It over time. It doesn't give you big spiritual experiences and stuff, right? But it cures that belief and brings eternal happiness, if that's enough for you. The other... I mean, you know, if you want bliss and all that, they'll come and they'll go. I guarantee if you get bliss one day, you're going to have hell the next day.
Yeah, I get lots of weird, synchronicity
right.
and all
yeah,
kinds
right.
of...
And it's okay. It can't hurt you.
I even manifest things.
Yes. Yeah. It's okay. It can't hurt you. It can't help you either. You know, really, there's no need for you to ever stop any of your practices.
Okay.
Or even keep up
well,
your
practices.
I like them. Yeah, it's okay. The only thing self-inquiry speaks to is the question of what are you? Not what are you doing, or what should you be doing, or what shouldn't you be doing, or how should you be, or what should you become. But what are you, really? That's all. That's the whole subject of self-inquiry. Nothing more to it. It doesn't care whether you continue practicing yoga or I don't know, whatever. You practice whatever you want. Stop practicing. It doesn't matter. But the first practice is self-inquiry, because self-inquiry, of course, is a practice. It's just a practice that doesn't require much of anything for you. The first practice is the repeated getting an experience of the reality of what you are. And really all that's required for this to occur is for you to have the intention to have the taste of the reality of what you are. And the reality of what you are is this that is the same always. Taste it. It's like water. Taste it. And the amazing thing about it is that once you taste it, like you did today, and knowing what has happened, you naturally go back to it because it feels good. The other aspect of self-inquiry is the investigation into that which you believe yourself to be. And that's, who am I? You see, there is this feeling within all of us, this center of personality, this center of action that is within all of us that feels like me. And generally what it feels like is contraction and claustrophobia and neediness and neuroses and all of that, right? It's kind of the essence of.
When I think of the question who, I think of who as separate. I'm separate from.
Yeah, right, right.
Like I'm me, he's with me, them.
Yes,
separate.
That's right. And it's separateness,
all the
right.
Separateness. Right. I'm separate.
Right. It's a center of separateness, claustrophobia,
yeah.
Neuroses, neediness, contraction, and all of that.
And I don't like separateness.
Well, like it or not. I mean, I kind of like it, but that's because I know that I'm not it. You're it. Tag. Boy, I'm really... Okay. The other aspect of self-inquiry is this, and unfortunately this is the aspect that prevails in most of the arenas in which people claim to be talking about self-inquiry. It is this investigation into the nature of this center of person, of neurotic neediness and separateness and contraction. Now, what happens is if you will move your attention without regard to the, spiritual niceties about who's moving the attention and all of that stuff, which just kind of gets you confused. If you will move your attention into this center of person, this center of what it feels like to need and not get, what it feels like to be separate, what it feels like to be me and not you, and all of that, what is always discovered in this inquiry is that this center that has seemed to be so problematic and so strong and hard and knotty disappears. It just kind of disappears. And that feels really, really good. It cannot survive investigation because it is nothing except thought. So, the purpose of that, the legitimate purpose of that, is to see what is behind that knot of person. What is the source of that knot of person? From whence comes that feeling of me? But unfortunately, in most spiritual circles that speak of self-inquiry, it doesn't get any further than, oh, I am nothing. That feels really good. If I look at myself, I disappear. I am nothing, and that feels really good. Now I've got it. Oh, I'm enlightened. But then, of course, since things are as they are, that which comes and goes, comes and goes. And that thought that I am me is a thought that comes and goes. So if I look at it real hard right now, sitting here, I will find that it is nothing, and everything will be sweet and easy. But then as soon as I kind of turn my back on it, that sucker will be back again, nagging at me. Nah, 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 nah. You know? And I'll, in my experience, and what my strategies for dealing with that mostly are, like, first, steadfast denial, right? No, that ain't it. That's, I'm got rid of that. I'm over that. I'm so over that. And then suffering and torment because the thing won't let me alone, and it won't be satisfied, and it won't go away. And then returning to the same practice of trying to make it go away, like the Scientologists dissolve clouds in the sky. And that's okay. I mean, really, it can't hurt you. It's just another practice, right? That can't hurt you, can't help you, can't touch you at all. It's just such a waste of time. You're here. That's the truth of it. You have never been absent. You are here when ego is raging, infantile, demanding, needy, horrifying. You are here when ego is dissolved and everything is smooth and easy and no thought prevails. In both of those instances, what they have in common is you. You are here. You have not been touched. You are unchanged. And it is the experience of that here-ness, that unchangedness, that is the medicine that will, in the end, rid you of the idea that it matters at all whether you say, who am I, or don't say, who am I, whether you dissolve ego or don't dissolve ego, whether you seek bliss or don't seek bliss, whether you understand or don't understand. It is the repeated taste of that unchanging balance. background reality that you are.
Well, I can remember every incident in my life, and it was me.
Yes.
Every incident I can remember, it was me.
Yes.
And it still is.
Still is.
So that's what you're suggesting I do, is just...
Just taste that. Taste directly, that. Immediately, without thinking about it.
Because Ramana doesn't say anything about that in the book.
Oh, yes, he does.
He does?
Yes, he does. That's all he says. That's all he ever says. You know, when Ramana says, check this out. When Ramana says, be as you are, he's laughing up his sleeve. Be as you are, as if you could be other. You know, I mean, really. That's the point. Ramana says, be as you are, hoping that it'll occur to you to say, oh, okay, well, what am I?
But you already know.
Yes, that's right. So stay there.
Okay.
Again and again, go there. Again and again.
This is pretty simple compared to some of the other stuff I've done.
It's way simple. It's so simple.
I mean, we do soul travel and go to other planes and all this other stuff.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, you know, really, I mean, it's okay. Can't help you. It's just what you do. Do this, and the idea that that's good or bad will, I mean, not the idea so much as good or bad. The idea that it can help you or hurt you will vanish. The idea that you have to know, I should do this or I shouldn't do that, that'll vanish.
Because they all say, this will help you.
Yeah,
this will really help you.
That's
you
know? Okay. They're making money on that.
This is going to get you to God really quick. You know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anybody else? Jan. Hi, nice to see you.
It's nice to see you. I don't really know what to say. I left Ventura at 1:45, and I knew I was being silly. Because, you know, I knew that it was going to take me over an hour to get here, but I did it anyway. So I don't know what that was about.
So here you are. Well, I was real happy when you came in, so maybe it was just that. I was happy to see you. I wish everybody in this room... This is amazing. I wish everybody in this room could have been there the first night we met in Ojai. I remember that very well. And it was much different. Look at you. Look what's come of you.
I thought I had something, a question, but I...
It's okay. If you have a question, do you?
So,
okay.
I think I just wanted to say hi.
Okay.
Thanks.
That's good. Hi. Thanks. Me too. Okay. Yes. We haven't spoken before, have we?
No, we have not.
What's your name?
David.
David, hi.
Hi, nice to meet you. I have a question, and I'm not exactly sure how to frame it. So,
it's okay.
It's very serious for me, so...
Huh?
It's a deep, from my heart, question. Before I ask it, though, I need to know, is it... I need to... I'm just beginning to become acquainted with you, mainly through YouTube. And I did come to satsang with you one time before. I'm going to need to use some terms from a teacher, another teacher, and I know that you were at one time associated with Gangaji. Is it okay to use some terms that she would...
Gangaji. I owe everything to Gangaji.
Okay. There's... the word discrepancy might be too intellectual a word. I don't want this to be intellectual at all. You say taste yourself as often as possible. Take your medicine. Taste the sweetness of who you are. And what I've gotten from Gangaji most of all is her invitation to walk through what she describes in different terms as the flaming gates of burning hell, the black hole, the crucifixion in order to find the resurrection, these types of things. I have experienced at a very early age, extremely young, even in utero, extreme trauma to my organism. I'm assuming that's what you mean by apparatus. And when, as I've been taking my medicine, dropping the mental story of who I am on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, what comes up is not sweetness. What comes up is essentially it feels like I'm reliving, not in terms of a story, but in the body, I'm reliving deep, deep trauma, deep, deep terror, deep, deep shock. It feels like when you say taste the sweetness of who you are, it feels like I'm doing something incorrect. Or when I see people go up on stage with Gangaji and she says, okay, drop what's underneath the fear, and they get it like that. I cannot do that. I go into the fear, I drop the story, and there's fear, there's terror, and I can sit with that. And I've been sitting with it on a daily basis for many months now, and it gets worse and worse, and as it gets worse and worse, I'm more and more determined to stick with it. And yet it feels like when I hear you say taste the sweetness of who you are, it makes me feel like I'm doing something quote-unquote wrong, and maybe even heading in a completely wrong direction, and yet at the same time, I know that I need to do this. I need to experience this stuff. It comes up. It comes up, and it feels like the story itself. I am this. I am that. The way I observe it is it feels like the story itself is a buffer from that experience of the nightmare coming up, and I've built the story to kind of keep this down, just like perhaps a drug addiction.
That is the purpose of the story.
Okay, so when I drop the story...
But how do you drop the story?
I drop the story by not... Well, not only that, by going in... By it's not even meditation. I used to have a meditation practice where I would count breath or work on certain things. I don't do that at all. It's just I sit... The word satsang, being with what is here, that's what it feels like. I sit, or I walk, or I be with whatever is there, and the story, when I don't keep it going, the story just seems to kind of fade into silence. And there's silence with stuff comes and goes. But the nightmare that comes up in my body is I don't know how to drop that. I don't know if that's part of the story or not.
So far, everything you have described to me is part of the story. The silence, the terror, the torment, the fear, the uncertainty, all of that is part of the story that's being told about you. Mm-hmm. It is this life. It is the life itself. And in this case, it's a life that has taken on characteristics, spiritual characteristics, a background of meditation practice, and now a relationship with Gangaji and the way Gangaji teaches things. You can't do anything wrong. The question, am I doing something wrong? You can't do anything wrong. If by what you mean, you fear that you are doing something that will make things worse for you.
Well, more
that it's pointless.
And pointless. Here's my question, okay? During the times when there is great terror and fear, during the times when you are sitting with that terror and fear, dropping the story about it, welcoming it, and so forth, during the times when silence prevails, during the times when there is the deep conviction that something is wrong and that the old stuff is going to come back, during the time when all of the confusion and torment and remembered trauma to the organism is playing out openly, during all those times, are you any different?
No, I recognize that there's a part of me that is.
Why would you say it's a part of you?
Okay, maybe it's what there is.
What I'm trying to point you to is the fact that by saying it's a part of you, this is a testimony to the power and the strength of your belief that you are this story. Because when I point you to something that is unchanging, this isn't like you're doing something wrong, but I just want to point this out to you, by saying that it's a part of me, is bringing this unchanging reality into the story, as a part of the story. Now, this itself is a practice. This bringing reality into the story and saying that's a part of me, or that silence is a part of me, or whatever. This itself is a practice that has appeared within you for good, justifiable reasons over time, right? You've had trauma in the womb, trauma in your life, all of these things. And of course, when we are newborn or unborn even, we don't have a clue as to what's going on. And all that happens is that these strategies begin to develop, and some of them work. I mean, they work well enough because here you are. You're still here, right? And if you didn't have these strategies, who knows? Maybe you wouldn't be here. Okay, so in that way, our allegiance to these things grows, and our allegiance to the underlying conviction that I am my life grows. But that's okay. Those practices, if the problem is in those practices, in other words, if what I have to do in order to be free is to rid myself of bad practices and keep the good practices, then I'm in trouble. Because so far as I can tell in my own life and my own life experience, there is no way that I have anything to say whatsoever about the practices that are deployed within this organism. So what I'm saying to you is this. Those practices are playing out. Some of them are good, some of them are bad. They all have had the perceived effect of keeping you alive and moving for however many years you've been alive and moving. What I'm telling you is that there's nothing whatsoever that you have to do about any of that. Nothing. That none of that has anything to do with you. No matter how justifiable and how strong the feeling is that it does, it doesn't. The reason that it feels so strongly that all of that has something to do with you, that the way your mind plays out, the way you succeed sometimes and fail other times, you feel good sometimes and feel bad other times, you feel the silence sometimes and not other times, you don't get it like the people who come up and sit with Gangaji. The reason why those practices and those activities are irrelevant to you is because you are not your life. Now, if you are not your life, then all of your attention and all of your work on the aspects and characteristics of your life is a waste of your time. It doesn't mean that, you know, like, and what I'm saying is that the actual things that are going on, you don't have anything to say about anyway, and all of your worrying about it is a waste of your time. If I am correct, and who knows, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, I may be making it all up. If I'm making it all up, Brahman is making it all up, and we all might be. But the thing that is so valuable about what I claim is that you can find out. It doesn't require you to rid yourself of fear. It doesn't require you to rid yourself of the negative things that you do, or to get better at dropping the story, or to get worse at dropping the story. All it requires you to do is, right now, in this moment, see that you are here. No matter what else is going on, underneath it all is you. Silent, unchanging, here. Absolutely certain that you are here. Not certain of anything else, nothing else. The rest of it's all up for grabs. But you're here, and that's for sure. If you will just look at that whenever you can, the idea that anything is at stake in this delicious drama will vanish. Maybe the drama will continue, but who cares? If you see a drama on the movie, no matter how skillfully it's presented to you, no matter how evocative it is and how it creates terror and sorrow and so forth in you, there's never, ever the sense that you're at stake in it. But you're here. That's all you know. That's all you can know. You're here. And the self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi is just to look at that. Look at that. Every chance you get. And whatever else you do is okay. You know, I mean, you can, in between times, you can struggle with meeting fear or not meeting fear or, you know, all of that stuff. That doesn't matter. It can't hurt you. Just so long as whenever you think of it, you just look at the fact that you're here. Look at yourself. Look at what you know. That's all you know. And the promise is that if you do that, you will see over time, it's like taking medicine. The time will come when you will see that, wow, you know what? All that drama may or may not be going on, but I'm okay. It gives you the revelation of eternal, permanent happiness that's always been here. It doesn't give you something new. It just gives you something that you have not recognized to be what it is. You.
So there's no real thing about getting beneath it, as she would say. You have what's beneath it. I get stuck in it, and you're saying that that's really okay to get stuck in it.
Yes, it's fine.
Okay.
I'm saying getting stuck in it doesn't hurt you.
Okay.
Getting unstuck doesn't
help. But can you taste the sweetness of who you are if you're stuck in it? Or do you need to get beneath it to taste whatever the sweetness is?
Whether you're stuck in it or not, you're still here, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Right. So what does it matter if you're stuck in it? You're still here. All that's required is that the thought appear within it. Am I here? Just remember our conversation. You will remember. And check and see. I'm still here. Stuck or unstuck?
And yet at the same time, I would assume that there's nothing wrong with attempting to come out of shock.
Nothing wrong with any of it.
Okay.
Nothing that happens within the apparatus that you believe yourself to be can hurt you or help you in any way whatsoever. That's the fundamental realization. And then, in that realization, if you feel like fixing the apparatus, well, go ahead and do so. Right? You follow me?
Yes.
Just taste yourself.
Okay.
Aren't you sweet? I mean, really, isn't it sweet to be here?
Yeah, sweet.
And you're always here.
Excuse me?
And you're always here. Stuck or unstuck, you're here.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Dave. And I'm very happy to,
nice to meet you
have
too.
This conversation with you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I guess we're done. This has been a magnificent meeting. Not just the people I spoke to, the meeting is all of us together here. This has been a magnificent meeting. I'm so grateful to you all. It's so hard. It seems so hard to see. It is impossible to see that stuck or not is beside the point. Really. Okay? Thank you for satsang. My heart's broken. I love you all. Om Shanti.